Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Wireless, a series all about radio broadcast on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. And as ever, a special welcome to all of our listeners on other community radio stations across Ireland. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on this month's edition of Wireless, we look back at the life of the man who changed the course of radio in Ireland and Britain, Ronan O'Rahilly, who died recently. We hear the story of his station, Radio Caroline, from the 1960s to the present day. And we remember the legendary radio broadcaster Gerry Ryan on the 10th anniversary of his death.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
The death was announced on April the 20th of Ronan O'Rahilly, the Irishman who founded the legendary British pirate station Radio Caroline, which changed the course of radio in the UK and also in Ireland. Ronan O'Rahilly was from Dublin, but his family owned the port of Greenore in County Louth, from where a former ferry ship, the MV Fredericia, set sail in 1964, equipped with a studio, transmitter and mast, with the aim of breaking the monopoly of broadcasting by the BBC in Britain and providing a contemporary pop music service. On the 28th of March, Radio Caroline took to the air on 199 metres with the Rolling Stones song Not Fade Away, which was, of course, dedicated to Ronan O'Rahilly. We'll be discussing the legacy of Radio Caroline in this programme and hearing interviews with those involved in the past and present incarnations of the station. In a moment, the broadcaster Declan Meehan will tell us about how Caroline caused an earthquake in British and Irish radio. But first, here's a flavour of Declan introducing a documentary called The Pirate Port, broadcast in 2014.
I'm walking along the quayside in Greenore, County Louth. It's a beautiful location on the Cooley Peninsula, with the waters of Carlingford Lough sparkling and the mountains of Mourne looming over us. It's a quiet place these days. The railway's gone. The luxury hotel's been pulled down. The ships don't take passengers to Holyhead anymore. But 50 years ago, Greenore was at the centre of a revolution. A media revolution which changed the world. I'm Declan Meehan. This is the story of the Pirate Port.
This is Caroline on 199, your all-day music station.
The time on Radio Caroline, Britain's first commercial radio station, 14 minutes to 6. Tony Blackburn here with All Systems Go.
Good morning to you!
On Radio Caroline North, this is the Gerry Layton Show.
Absolutely right.
John Sebastian and the Loving Spoonful. Their latest and greatest, Summer in the City. You heard it first on the Sound of the Nation. That's Caroline South.
It's hard to describe just how remarkable it was to hear sounds like that coming out of your radio in the daytime. The Beatles and the Stones were in the charts, but we could only listen to their records on Radio Luxembourg in the evening. All that changed forever when the pirate radio ship Caroline began broadcasting in Easter 1964. Within a few months, disc jockeys like Simon D, Tony Blackburn and Emperor Roscoe had become household names. The station's charismatic founder, Ronan O'Rahilly, was a celebrity in fashionable swinging London. But no one knew about the vital role played by the humble little port of Greenore. George Beattie was born here in the 1930s.
In the middle 1800s, there was great competition in England.
An extract from The Pirate Port, written and produced by Trevor Dann and with the support of the BAI, a documentary broadcast on News Talk in 2014. We caught up with Declan Meehan, now a broadcaster on East Coast FM in Wicklow, and asked him to tell us his earliest memory of Radio Caroline.
It was a bank holiday weekend one Sunday afternoon And we'd been out somewhere with the family. And as usual, when I came home, I switched on the radio to have a look around and see what was going on. I had an old Palm radio, which had a trawler band. And I used to listen out for the ships and various things like that. And I happened to jump onto the medium wave to leave it back for the parents, for Radio Éireann. So I was tuning it around, and next thing I heard this music coming out the far end of the band. It was pop music. Gosh, I wonder what this is. And it turned out to be Radio Caroline. I didn't know anything about Radio Caroline. I think the first DJ that I heard was a guy named Roger Gale, who turned out to be a Conservative MP up to recently. I don't know if he still is now, but certainly he was up to the last election. So Roger Gale turned to politics after that. But I think I can credit him with the first DJ I ever heard. And here was this radio station playing music. And my uncle called around the next day and said, have you heard Radio Caroline? And I said, yeah, but what is it? And he said, it's on a boat. He says, they're somewhere in the Irish Sea and they're playing music all day. And that for me certainly was the start of, I suppose, the fairy tale of it. I wanted to be on Radio Caroline. That's where I wanted to be, because I loved the music. I loved the idea of it being a pirate radio station, which was outside the three-mile limit. It was doing something naughty. For my generation, it was part of the swinging 60s. The parents didn't like the music. The parents didn't like the fact that it was illegal. And here was these, what maybe were being referred to as scruffy DJs playing popular music on a boat. And I said, I want to be part of that. And from then on, that has been a mission in life, to be on Radio Caroline back in the 1960s.
But you never quite made it, though, despite your desires. But you came close, because you were involved in pirate radio in Ireland. And of course, pirate radio in Ireland is directly linked to the Radio Caroline story. So can you explain that link to us?
Yeah, when Caroline started, and unfortunately it ended in March of 1968, there was the void that had to be filled. So having desired to be out there on that Caroline, I set about with friends, because we wanted to be on a pirate radio station, more people like me. We didn't want to be footballers or pop stars. We wanted to be DJs on Caroline. And we had all these pretendies or imitation Carolines in our house. So initially, my first one was a station called Channel something or other, Channel Radio or something, in a wardrobe in a house down the road with a couple of friends. But that became a different situation in the 1970s, when I met some people who actually had a transmitter. So my first radio station, Radio Vanessa, was similar, that it was in a wardrobe in a bedroom, but it was with a pirate transmitter there to be avoided detection from the Department of Post and Telegraph. But the thing was to be on the radio and pretend that we were on the Caroline ships. And of course, that was 1970 for me. Ronan Collins was around at the same time. And many of us got involved in pirate radio stations, and they got bigger and bigger towards the end of the 70s, which prompted RTE in the end to have RTE 2FM open up. So that was their answer. That was the establishment answer to all these little pirate radio stations imitating Radio Caroline. And RTE opened in 1979, RTE Radio 2.
And we're talking today in the context of the death of Ronan O'Rahilly, the Irishman who set up Radio Caroline. So who was Ronan O'Rahilly, and what was your knowledge of him?
Well, Ronan to me was like a pop star, because here was this guy and he looked the part of a rebellious Irish guy. He was dressed in a suit a lot of times, but he'd also be somebody who looked like a hippie with his long hair and his beard and things like that. And he became, I suppose, in the way John Lennon became a person of protest for people in music, Ronan O'Rahilly was maybe the person to follow, a disciple of Ronan, the guy who was bringing pop music all day, every day, to people who were being denied that access to pop music because of RTE or Radio Éireann and the BBC. So he was forever a hero, and that's what he was to me. But I'm not the only one saying it, because in the tributes to Ronan, so many people have said, my hero, Ronan O'Reilly, because he introduced the idea of working on the radio to them.
And you met him on a number of occasions, didn't you? Or at least you were in company where he was present. How did that feel?
Yeah, well, it was unbelievable. I went to this guy's party, Dave Finn. It was near Watford. And I can't remember what age he was, but I was invited to the party. And the first person I met there was a guy I knew, Tom Anderson. His real name is Tim. Tom Anderson from Radio Caroline went down but the ship Mi Amigo went down, and he was rescued from that. He was at the party, and he says, there's a rumour that maybe Ronan is dropping out tonight. So Ronan came in with Chris Carey. And, of course, I'd known Chris from Nova. This was the late 80s. And here was Ronan O'Reilly in a guy's house in the living room and kitchen having a beer. And, of course, we all like to, you know, gravitate towards Ronan to have the conversation. But everybody was a real radio anorak at the party. So we got our turn of sort of rubbing shoulders and getting into the conversation with Ronan. And I just felt that he was so charismatic. He was the leader, as I mentioned earlier on about John Lennon. It was just similar to having somebody of that stature being in the house. You just wanted to be in their company.
And you mentioned Chris Carey, and of course Chris Carey was one of the former DJs on Radio Caroline who had a direct and a very important influence on Irish radio when he and others came to Ireland at the beginning of the 1980s and changed the Irish radio scene beyond recognition. What was your involvement with that change?
Well, Chris was, as you said, came to Ireland. He came over with Robbie Robinson. Also, Tony Allen came over, and Andy Archer and Brian McKenzie from Radio North Sea were already here. And there's a direct timeline when you consider Ronan starting Caroline and people like me wanting mini Carolines, putting the pressure on for RT Radio 2 to start, and then poor old Radio 2 having a dilemma between their urban and rural listeners. It didn't really satisfy people in Dublin, so the Pirates came back stronger. And because they weren't closed down after RTE, it gave an opportunity to people to come over and do it better. And these guys, with the experience of Caroline and their involvement with Radio North Sea, for example, they brought that experience to Ireland to have the super pirates at the time, Sunshine and Nova. So they were over because they heard things could be done better, and he was an outlet for what they were being denied, say, on British radio, and they got an opportunity to do it in Ireland. And for me, them coming over and starting, as they did with Sunshine, it was like actually being on a ship with Tony Allen and Chris Carey and Robbie Robinson. My dream was there. And I remember looking out the window from the Sands Hotel, because it wasn't in the porter cabin initially, it was upstairs. And you could actually look out and see Howth and the sea and the beaches and the little islands that are off Port Marnock. And imagine that you're actually on the Fredericia or the Mi Amigo or something like that. So for me, it was a dream come true. But for radio's development, it, of course, they were so successful that it prompted the legislation in 1989, which brought about legal independent radio in Ireland.
So for somebody listening who doesn't know much about the background to Radio Caroline, then would that be what you see as the legacy of Radio Caroline and Irish radio, that it led directly in the end to legislative change that paved the way for the current radio landscape?
The chain reaction that was started on Easter Sunday 1964 started the independent radio stations in Ireland in 1989.
And how much of the pirate radio sound in the 80s do you think was similar to that of Radio Caroline? Obviously, tastes had changed, popular culture had moved on, but how much of the style was encapsulated in the Irish pirate radio scene?
I think particularly on Nova, the freedom that we were given on Radio Nova to just do what you wanted to do within reason. Chris was very open to creativity, and he just said, try it. You know, here's some idea. Yeah, if you want to try it, try it. Try it for a week. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. There's no sort of let's have loads of meetings about something and see what the consequences of not trying something is. So there was a great feeling of Chris was a pirate. We loved the fact as well on Nova that it was illegal as well to a certain extent, even though to all intents and purposes, the only thing it didn't have was the license. But there was the recapturing of that 1960s feel and outlook with particularly Radio Nova in the 1980s.
And you're working today now, Declan, with East Coast FM in Wicklow, and obviously you're broadcasting from home because of the COVID-19 restrictions. So is there a certain, perhaps, historical memory of broadcasting radio stations from bedrooms and from kitchens in the past?
It's very similar, like Radio Vanessa. What we had to do was erect the aerial the night before we go broadcasting, and we would use the old TV aerials and get a feed from that and look up, try and get a quarter wave, medium wave aerial out the back garden. And then we would each bring our own record players to the studio and link up those with a very, you know, 4 quid mixer out of Pizza Parnell Street to make the mixing unit. We'd have a microphone, never mind the quality, just as long as you had one. Got some headphones and broadcasting from the bedroom, and that was it. There were times, of course, you'd have to look out the window, because if you heard a noisy van coming up the road, you thought it was the detector van from the Department of Post and Telegraphs or whatever. So things are a little bit more sophisticated now because the equipment we used is done an internet feed. But the atmosphere of broadcasting from home, I think it's very reminiscent of what happened in the 1970s.
Declan Meehan of East Coast FM in Wicklow on Radio Caroline and its influence on both British and Irish radio. And you can hear a longer interview with Declan on our archive site pirate.ie.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
August the 14th, 2017 was the 50th anniversary of the passage of the UK's Marine Broadcasting Offences Act, which tried and failed to put Radio Caroline off the air. On the 50th anniversary of that date in 2017, the veteran Caroline broadcaster Tony Blackburn, who we heard at the start of this programme, was interviewed on BBC Five Live.
Just a short blast of Radio Caroline for you, one of the pirate radio stations that was targeted by the Marine Offences Act, which became law 50 years ago today. And it was the introduction of that that signalled the end of pirate radio. So if you're talking about pirate radio, who else to talk to but the wonderful, legendary Tony Blackburn. Tony, hello.
What a lovely introduction. Thank you very much.
It's true. I mean, you are. I mean, Radio Caroline, Radio London, Big L. I mean, that was, when people think of pirate radio, you're one of the big names they think of, aren't you?
Well, I joined, yes, I was one of the originals to join. I joined about 2 months after it started, Radio Caroline in the South. And it was immensely exciting. I loved it and very proud to have been a part of it because it did revolutionise the whole of radio in this country. And no matter, you know, if you saw that film recently that we saw, which I didn't like, it made it out to be, you know, the fact we were just out there for a load of nonsense. But there was a serious side to it. We really did want to bring about an end to the BBC monopoly and bring about actually commercial radio. That was the idea of it.
Yeah. And I mean, just take us back. I mean, in particular, your audition for Caroline and the fact that, I mean, you talk about the difference from the BBC, but something like that, that particular story just shows how different it was.
Well, yes, I went to Caroline House, 6 Chesterfield Gardens, and I met the programme controller there, who was standing on his head throwing a dart at a dartboard. I don't quite know why. And then I was asked to do an audition, which I did, and I wandered round. They said, can you come back in a couple of hours? I wandered round Hyde Park, and then they said, this was on the Friday, they said, can you be on the boat on the Monday? And so I said, well, I could make it by Wednesday, and that's where it started.
Yeah.
And I remember going out from Harwich, because we had to go through customs. We were officially going to Holland, but we never got there for 3 years. And we stopped off on the way. And I remember seeing this little boat, the Mi Amigo, and I thought, this is fantastic. And I was out there looking at Frinton on the sea for the next three and a half years.
Didn't you end up at the top of the mast in a gale once?
I did, yes. yes, I went up. There was some problem with the rigging, and nobody would go out there, and it was quite rough, the sea. And I volunteered. I was only 21 years old, you know, I should have known better. But I went up and up that mast. Yes, terrifying, actually.
Yeah, no, but it's not like the radio stations of today. Actually, you know, when you think about it, you said there about the way that it changed the face of radio. And, you know, there might be people listening now who, you know, maybe listen to different radio stations who don't realise actually that what you were doing then was, you know, incredibly radical and cool and very, very different to what was going on elsewhere.
Well, it was. I mean, I've always loved the BBC, and I eventually did want to join it very much, but it was only the BBC there. And what we wanted to do was to bring about commercial radio. I'd been to America, I'd heard all the American stations, and I thought, it's good to have choice. And so when we went out there, that was the whole idea of it. So there was a point to it, and it took 3.5 years. And in actual fact, what actually happened, I joined Big L Radio London, and Radio London is the one that the whole of modern-day radio is based on, really. And when I opened up Radio 1, all the jingles were the original Radio London jingles, because it was an American-owned firm, and they brought in these high-powered... Sorry?
Was it Pam's, the old...
Pam's jingles,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And I introduced those on Pick of the Pops when I was doing it on Radio 2 as well, because they're wonderful jingles, and we had the Top 40 radio system, which they'd never heard in this country before. But Radio Caroline was the first, and I, and they're getting their license today after 50 years to broadcast. It's taken a long time, but I owe so much to it as well.
What was it unusual as well? I mean, obviously the soul music that you loved then and love so much now, and you're still doing your soul programme now, nowadays. And then, you know, in a way, you brought that to the UK. Was that freedom that you maybe, you know, radio presenters don't get nowadays?
Well, I'm very lucky because I choose all my own music on the various programs that I do. But most radio presenters don't. And unfortunately, you know, particularly in commercial radio, you're not allowed to have a personality. You know, it's three records in a row and a time check. And that's what I love about the BBC. We're allowed to have our personality. And so therefore... You know, joining Radio 1, as I did eventually, that was just tremendous, and it was a great time. But the pirate radio stations were the thing that gave me my start, and I'll always be very grateful for that.
Yeah. Does it make you a bit sad the way that radio's gone there? Well, as you say, it's changed so much.
I think there's too much of it. There's too much radio now, if it's a strange thing to say. It does upset me a little bit the way that people aren't allowed to have a personality, and this constant business about playing the same records over and over and over and over again, I think that is just nonsense. But, you know, that's the way they do it nowadays. And who am I to say that they're not doing it correctly?
Did you sit and listen to the close down of the Pirates?
We did. Do you know where I heard Radio London closing down, Big L Radio London, was in this very building that I'm in, Broadcasting House in London. And it was played all over the building because there was a lot of genuine love for it. And Johnny Beerling, who was the second controller of Radio 1, he came out to Radio London to see how we did it. And when we all joined the BBC, it was very funny because it was the flower power era, and I had a suit on and being terribly BBC-ish, and all the BBC people were wearing colourful shirts. And but the changeover was great, and they made us feel very welcome. And Kenny and I, we were the ones that actually sort of helped them to build the very first Radio 1 studio, which is now no longer there, obviously. Yeah. But it was the self-op studio. But before that, I joined the Light programme, and it was very strange. I remember saying to somebody out there, when I first do my programme at the BBC, there'll be a dear old lady knitting a jumper. And when I got into the studio, her job was to open up the microphone because I didn't put the records on, and she was actually knitting a jumper. And during the programme that I was doing, she knitted half a sleeve.
I hope you've still got that in the wardrobe.
I haven't. It wasn't for me.
Oh, what a shame. Oh, look, Tony, it's an absolute joy to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Tony Blackburn. I mean, do share as well, 85058, your memories of the Pirates and also what things are like now. I mean, the afternoon edition this afternoon is...
Tony Blackburn of Radio Caroline interviewed on BBC Five Live. A special programme to commemorate the anniversary was broadcast on August the 13th on three stations simultaneously, Radio Caroline itself, BBC Radio Essex and Manx Radio. Here's a flavour of that programme presented by Ray Clark.
Good afternoon. Welcome. This is Radio Caroline, Pirate BBC Essex and Manx Radio. Whoever would have thought it, hey?
Pirate BBC Essex.
And the nation station, Manx Radio, for the Isle of Man. So why have all of these broadcasting organisations come together? Well, 50 years ago, Radio London had just closed down. Caroline remained defiant. We were about to lose Radio 270 and Radio Scotland. The last of the pirates was to be Radio Caroline. And she continued and continues to this day, now with a new community license that'll broadcast on medium wave back to the area where we wanted to broadcast to, where this station wanted to broadcast to 50 years ago. What on earth was all the fuss about? Hey, why didn't they give Radio Caroline a license then? What will be doing in this hour here on Pirate BBC Essex Radio Caroline and Manx Radio is trying to catch up on 50 years in about 50 minutes. Now, let me take you back to those days in 1967. August the 14th, for much of England, was overcast, was cloudy, was wet. It was a miserable day. Now, the people in the Isle of Man had a little bit more fortune. Radio Caroline North broadcast off their shores, and Caroline remained legal, or at least working for Caroline remained legal, for a further 2 weeks. We'll get the story about that from Manx Radio in just a moment. It is a fascinating history, but don't get caught listening to an offshore radio station.
You have been found guilty of listening to an offshore commercial station. This is your 59th offense. Therefore, your punishment must be severe. I sentence you to listen to the BBC Light for the rest of your life.
Anything but that!
Order! Any more of this contempt of court, and it will be the Home Service. That's better.
Sounds a bit draconian, but that really was the way it was. Thank goodness that Caroline continued. That's what many, many, many thousands, millions at the time said. But a lot of people might not realise that Caroline has continued on and off over those years, and other offshore radio stations as well. We'll try and bring you a bit of that history. We're with the BBC, who inform, educate and entertain, and we intend doing that this afternoon. With Manx Radio, from Manx Radio, is Chris Williams. Chris, you can tell us just a little bit about what happened on the Isle of Man after all August the 14th.
Well, after August the 14th, 1967, this had been going on for about a year or so before that, Ray, where the British government had been saying to the Manx government, look, you can't have a radio station broadcasting in your territorial waters. And there was a huge political groundswell of opinion for keeping Radio Caroline off the Manx coast in Ramsey Bay, and you know, Manx, the Isle of Man is an offshore jurisdiction, so we can take our lead from what the British government say and want us to do, but we don't have to do that. So politically, it was a bit of a political punch ball for a while. Eventually, the Lord of Man, who ultimately is the Queen of England, said, no, I'm afraid you have to get rid of Radio Caroline. And there was an order passed in Tynwald which made it illegal for Radio Caroline to broadcast in Manx territorial waters. We had a 3-mile limit in that stage. So, you know, we could have had somebody had the backbone in the Isle of Man, I suppose, in hindsight, could have said, no, actually, we're going to ignore you. But in the event, they didn't. So in 68, the Federation left the Isle of Man.
It's the history of the United Kingdom, the Isle of Man and all other territories. And it could have been so different because of people playing pop music on the radio. What on earth's wrong with that?
Ray Clark from a special commemorative programme to mark the 50th anniversary of the Marine Broadcasting Offences Act in 1967, which failed to put a stop to Radio Caroline. There have been many twists and turns in the Caroline story, but none so ironic, perhaps, as the decision of the British telecommunications regulator Ofcom to award the station a full-time licence in 2017. The thorn in the side of the BBC and the British broadcasting establishment for decades is now a fully licensed community operator broadcasting to Essex and North Suffolk on AM, the original band on which Caroline broadcast. In July 2017, as the station was preparing to return to AM, we spoke to the veteran broadcaster Peter Moore, who told us about the long journey from the pirate radio ships to the fully legal station of today.
You know, I've always loved boats in the sea. And I do love music. I was always interested in the pirate stations of the 60s, and I told myself if I ever had a chance to get involved, I would. So I found I had some spare time on my hands, so I volunteered to get involved around 1985. And it was terribly interesting but very distressing time, because we had a lot of problems. The British government increased the territorial limit, not to harass us, but simply for other reasons. So the ship had to go further out to sea. And then there was a hurricane. And then the mast fell down. And then the ship was raided at sea by armed officials. And then we were shipwrecked. So it was a terrible, terrible downward spiral, which culminated in a shipwreck in 1991. And the infrastructure of the station fell to bits, and there were only a few of us left. So we decided our choice was to give up and walk away or start all over. So we started all over.
And what did that mean, starting all over? Because it was the end of the pirate era, essentially, 1990, 1991.
It was, because aside from anything else, a new law was passed which closed all the loopholes in the fairly lax earlier law. So all we actually had, you know, as an asset, was a wrecked ship and no money, and we weren't on the air anywhere. So we realised that no one could expect to get paid, so we all decided to work for no wages. And then we asked the Caroline enthusiasts, which were quite numerous, fortunately, whether they might fund us to a token sum of maybe £5 a month to see what we could rescue from the disaster. And gradually, slowly, we built up from that. As you say, we were limited at first to these one-month low-power broadcasts around various locations, just to indicate that Radio Caroline still existed in some form or the other. Although, of course, we were ridiculed by many for Caroline being a pale shadow of what it had once been. Our view was, well, it's better than nothing. So then we found you could broadcast on analog satellite and then digital satellite, which was very good range and very good quality, but very difficult to get an audience. And then we tried internet, which fortunately expanded rapidly. When we started, I didn't know anyone that really had a computer, and now I don't know anyone that doesn't have a computer, so that's very good. And then the DAB opportunity came for local DAB, of which we have six regions. The AM started in 2010 when we said to the regulator Ofcom, look, nobody really wants AM these days, so why can't we have a little bit of what no one else wants? And Ofcom said, well, that's not how it works. So we campaigned and campaigned, and by the time an opportunity came to apply, we would look foolish not to. So we applied for a license, and lo and behold, we got it.
So why were Ofcom so reluctant to allow you to establish yourselves on AM? What was the issue?
The issue was that Ofcom do what Ofcom want. Their attitude at the time was that they weren't going to license any more AM whatsoever, and further, that if they were minded to license any more AM, there were no frequencies anyway. But of course, that was a nonsense. But the way they've licensed us is to give us a license, but we're a community service. But community in our case, in the way we're using the word, means a community of interest, which simply is people that like listening to Radio Caroline. And while we were told to expect a power of between 20 and 70 watts, some kind soul has given us a kilowatt and, of course, a clear frequency, because we're using the old BBC World Service frequency.
I remember when I lived in Belgium listening to BBC World Service on 648 kilohertz, which is the frequency that you've been allocated, and it was as clear as day, but I could never receive it in Ireland. So clearly that was a directional transmitter. Will you be using a directional signal as well, or will it be omnidirectional?
It'll be omnidirectional. I know about 648 and what you describe, and that is because both 648 and 1296 were World Service frequencies, and they were very cleverly beamed by a system of four masts pointed across at Europe and the target areas they wanted to go to. But nowhere, our signal will be omnidirectional.
So there is a slim possibility, perhaps, that we might be able to pick you up in Galway, maybe during the day, nighttime hours.
At nighttime, it might skip over there. Indeed, sometimes I can hear Manx Radio on 1368 in Essex, so all is possible.
So coming back to your application then with AM, you said that you had to start a campaign in order to persuade Ofcom that this was a runner. What form did that campaign take? What exactly did you have to do?
one of my colleagues devised a thing called the Fares Fair campaign, saying, hey, look, you know, what hurt would it do just to give us boys a license? Unfortunately, an MP called Tracy Crouch, whose father had been a broadcaster and was an enthusiast for Radio Caroline, came to join us, and she used her influence to pose some type of parliamentary question along the lines of, like, why not give a license to Radio Caroline? And I think a man called Richard Bacon, who was a minister, sort of adopted the campaign. And in the end, we had 75 MPs all asking the same question. But Ofcom accepted that they were being put under pressure, but they were not minded to bow to pressure, basically because, you know, they have a monopoly. So it just took an awful long time from 2010 to 2016 for a gradual shift of attitude within Ofcom to say, well, maybe these guys have got a point. But of course, when they offered the opportunity, we didn't have any preferential treatment. Anyone could apply and anyone could be chosen. It just so happened that we were.
And what would you say to people who would claim that AM is very much a technology of the past and that nobody's really listening anymore and that you're wasting your time really going on AM? Why just not concentrate on developing DAB or developing online? Why the attraction of AM? What is the attraction?
It's sort of a number of levels that works on. First of all, AM radio works as well as it ever did. It hasn't got any worse. DAB radio will be the future because the authorities have decided so. But DAB is a very fragile system, and it falls over, you know, at the merest, you know, problem. It doesn't have a lot of range, especially at low power. It's interrupted by, you know, terrain and buildings. And in the early days, it was called by the industry a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. A decent AM signal with good modulation and will go a long way. And anyway, this is what we do. Radio Caroline sends an AM signal. That's what we started doing in 1964. We're very good at it.
So presumably your listenership will be of that vintage, of that era.
We are expecting that the listeners will rediscover us, and the great thing is they'll rediscover the station they remember. To the most part, they'll rediscover the music they remember, and equally, it'll be played to them by the people they remember, because a lot of early Caroline staff have now ended their conventional careers, have come back to us. So it's like a time capsule, and also we have our ship.
Okay, so will you be broadcasting from the Ross Revenge then all of the time, or some of the time, or what's the plans with that?
Some of the time, we'd obviously have to open the service from the Ross Revenge, because it'd be so fitting to do so, especially if it was possible to do it on August the 14th, which is the 50th anniversary of the law that was supposed to stop us functioning. So yes, we will open from the ship, because new technology means you don't have to have anything much more than a link into the 4G phone network.
And will you reach that date of the 14th of August, do you think?
We'll have a damn good try, because it would be just a magical thing to do, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And I think many people will think it supremely ironic that Radio Caroline is getting a license after being the symbol of the very essence of what pirate radio was about for so long.
Yes. I mean, we could have dug our heels in and refused a license and just gone in a corner and sulked. But then the idea is to entertain people. So we don't mind. And the fact that it's a BBC frequency, who were for many years our sworn enemies, is also quite fitting and shows that we've become friends in at the end of the day.
So for those of our listeners who are far too young to remember Radio Caroline and don't know what it was about, can you give us a flavour of why this whole station is so important and why it matters to go back on AM now and, as you say yourself, create this time capsule for people who were among the original listeners and indeed the original broadcasters? Why does it matter so much?
Ah, that's a big question, so let's do my best. Ronan O'Reilly, who founded the station and had the idea, came from a notable Irish family of rebels because Michael Joseph O'Reilly was killed in the 1916 uprising, his grandfather. And so I think probably Ronan launched Radio Caroline in 1964 on the Easter weekend to make a point of his own. Mm-hmm. But equally, he was told that, you know, he was a music promoter. Equally, he was told that the BBC and Radio Luxembourg simply wouldn't play his music. And coming from a family where he generally got his own way, he didn't like to be told that he couldn't get what he wanted. So a lot of it, apart from the rebel side, was to teach the BBC and Radio Luxembourg a lesson by toppling their monopoly, and he completely succeeded in doing that. And, of course, Radio Caroline never did anybody an ounce of harm. So I personally thought it very unfair that a law was drafted to close it down because it was so hugely popular. And it's human nature, you know. If you're told you can't do a thing, you very much want to do it. So the fact of the law trying to close us down galvanized everybody at the time to say, well, we're not going to give in. And that's the attitude which has pervaded ever since to the present day.
Peter Moore of Radio Caroline speaking to us in July 2017 about the return of the station as a community broadcaster on AM. But how successful has the return to AM been, and what are the prospects for Caroline's future? We went back to Peter in June 2018 to find out.
We feel it's going extremely well. I mean, the only measurement we can make is the number of people that send us reception reports. And if nobody did, then we'd be rather concerned. But when we launched the service, we were inundated with reception reports. And the great thing is, of course, the range of the AM is considerable because AM just keeps going. Our advantage is that if you're at the edge of reception or certain times of day you don't get good reception, we're equally available online or on mobile devices. So what the listeners get from us is like either or. You know, they can listen on AM, they can listen online, they can listen on a tablet or an app or a phone. You know, the choice is there. So I think the things complement each other. But what we like about it, of course, is it feels authentic because it's what we used to do, and now we're doing it all over again and almost in the same way as before.
So has it changed the atmosphere then of those or among those involved in working in the station?
Yeah, I mean, it feels, I can't think of the right phrase, but it feels proper. I mean, it's good to be on the internet and you get global, you know, reach. Although 50% of the internet audience are in the UK. But what we've tried to do is make it as authentic as we possibly can. So, you know, we've retained the ship, which is fully functional. We've got a lovely AM frequency with a reasonable amount of power from a very good location. So if you bring all those things together, unless we took, you know, the ship out into the middle of the ocean again, we're as close as we can be to, you know, to the authentic way we used to operate. And we think that's good. And it's caused a sort of upsurge of enthusiasm among the staff.
And when you say that the signal is getting out very well and you've had reception reports from all over the place, can you tell us where they've come from and what people have been saying?
Well, people have been saying that the reception, you know, from hundreds of miles away from the transmitter is, you know, is good enough not to be remarkable, if you see what I mean. I mean, we couldn't have built a facility as good as the one we found. It was all there, unused, waiting for someone to re-energize it, and we couldn't build a mast for 648 that radiates as well as the one the BBC built for the same purpose. So that's a bonus, and the amount of power we were given was generous, and the site location is perfect. So, I mean, we're getting reports from, you know, the Midlands and from parts of Europe and down into Kent, Surrey, Sussex, where, I won't say the signal shouldn't go, it can go where it wishes, but it's going further than we could have hoped for.
And have you received any reports from Ireland?
You know, I'm not entirely sure that we have, sadly. We'd like to. We have to sort of satisfy ourselves, if we're talking about AM still, that the Manx radio transmitter that is kindly loaned to us every month, with the absence of any interference on 1368, because all the other operators have closed down, We're getting good reception in Ireland and the north of England, Wales and Scotland on 1368.
Certainly, that's the case. And since those stations, other stations have gone off the air, the reception has improved hugely in Galway at night on 1368. But going back to your own frequency of 648, you were saying before we came on air that the transmitter site is located on a salt marsh and that this also contributes to good reception, I believe.
You're entirely correct. I'm no technician, but I've learned that with AM radio, the earth is as important as the aerial, which is why the radio ships always had tremendous range, because they were sitting in salt water. Now, our aerial is not sitting in or on salt water, although it is very nearly so, because it's based on a shingle salt marsh, which at times has been flooded by the sea. So it's, you know, the base of the aerial is on wet, you know, wet, salty ground. And the BBC, having a budget which vastly exceeds anything we could afford, have buried a great deal of copper cable in the ground to give it the perfect earth. So, and then, of course, part of the signal goes out over water, which, again, is a bonus for us.
So what's next then for Radio Caroline? Obviously, there was a long campaign to get you onto 648. That's been achieved now, is going well, as you say. So what's the next plan for development?
Well, yes. I mean, I have to say it took so long to get the AM that when the announcement was made, it was almost an anticlimax, although we tried to, you know, show as much enthusiasm as we could. But with the law of diminishing returns, okay, we got 648. Been there, done that. The next thing we did, of course, was take DAB for London, which is a new development which has been happening for a few weeks. It's a trial service, so it's not as robust as a full commercial service. But as the AM creeps, you know, into East London, if people find themselves having difficulty listening to the AM, or they don't want to listen online, now they can listen on DAB, so gradually we're covering all bases. There's a couple more DAB experimental areas we could take, but I'm thinking that London and the southeast is our traditional heartland. So to go for a signal, for instance, in Bristol or Manchester, which is possible, that's not really our traditional stamping ground. So having got the DAB, I don't know where we'll go next. There is a thought in my mind, there's a lot of community stations in England who can't easily fill their programming 24 hours a day. So maybe another path for us is to offer some Caroline programming to these hundreds of community stations which are operating up and down the country.
You might even have a few stations in Ireland who'd take up on that offer as well, I think, Peter. But to come back to the DAB in London then, is this one of the new small-scale DAB licensing experiments by Ofcom?
It is, but the operator is particularly enthusiastic, and having started out with two transmitters, he's now added a third, all of them on high ground, of course, and now he wants a fourth to extend his range out and beyond East London. But he's obviously, by terms of the Ofcom licence, not looking for any reception beyond the M25, which is the ring road around London. At the moment, he's more talking about reception within the North and South Circular Roads, which were originally a ring road around London,
yes,
but much closer in. But DAB is strange. You can never tell where it's going to pop up. It's not sort of rock solid like AM is.
But presumably this would bring your programmes to a very large audience in another medium. I mean, presumably we're talking about millions of people, potentially.
I reckon, I don't know the population of London, but I reckon it's in, you know, in the region of 10 million. So even a small percentage of that is good enough for us.
So just to come back to AM then, Peter, I mean, obviously, is there a risk of it becoming entirely redundant once the Caroline listeners who grew up on AM pass on, effectively? I mean, it's, the profile of your listenership is probably very strong within the original listeners to Radio Caroline from the late 1960s.
Yeah, it's a valid point. And just to illustrate it, we do invite people to come and visit our ship, and they do so in large quantities. But when I'm there watching the trip boat come alongside, I look at the age of the people who are waiting to come on board, and yes, they're, as am I, they are of a certain age. I don't know whether we could sell AM and our music policy to a younger audience unless they grow into the type of music we like to send. It's an impossible question. I guess AM will die out one day, and the march of DAB is unstoppable, but for a station like Caroline, it's still the ideal place to be.
Peter Moore of Radio Caroline in 2018 telling us about the station's return to AM as a licensed operator. You can find out more and also listen to Radio Caroline at radiocaroline.co.uk.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
And finally, to another important commemoration, the 10th anniversary of the death of Gerry Ryan, one of Ireland's best-known radio broadcasters of recent decades. As with so many household names, Ryan cut his teeth in the pirate radio scene in Dublin in the late 1970s before joining the new RTE Radio 2 in 1979. In a far-sighted move on the part of RTE, he was moved to the high-profile mid-morning slot in March 1988, and within a year had established himself as Ireland's most popular radio broadcaster, generating huge advertising revenue for 2FM. 10 years to the day after Ryan's death, on the 30th of April, I was interviewed about him on our sister station, Phoenix FM, in Dublin.
He did present the Late Late Show just the once, but radio was where he was at home. I think he had tried Schools Around the Corner on television, and he had the Gerry Ryan Show on television, but it really didn't work for him. He was at home on the wireless.
The television material, I think, looked kind of ridiculous. The programmes didn't really seem to suit him. And even in the recent RTE documentary about him, I think the people involved would have admitted that perhaps television didn't suit him so much. And I think given his style, he probably would have been too unpredictable and volatile for a relatively safe middle-of-the-road programme like The Late Late Show, which isn't going to rock too many boats. That's what it's become over the years. But I think radio definitely was where he excelled. I have to admit that I was never a great fan of Gerry Ryan myself. It wasn't my style of broadcasting, but I could recognise as a broadcaster myself and as somebody who's interested in radio, the way that he could connect with people. It was quite incredible. And that sense, that rare sense in a broadcaster where you feel that the person is talking to you personally and you feel that you're being listened to by them and that you are their world for the time that you're listening. He was able to capture that, even though the material was crazy and was pretty vulgar and not popular with everybody and certainly caused a lot of concern among RTE management. But at the same time, the advertising ratings were through the roof. And for that reason, I think they tolerated Gerry Ryan an awful lot more than they would have if the advertising hadn't been so strong in the first place.
Where did it all start for Gerry Ryan in radio? Did he come from the Pirates?
He did come from the Pirates. He was in Radio Dublin briefly, but he was more strongly associated with Big D, which was essentially a breakaway from Radio Dublin in Dublin at the end of the 1970s, and a station that was trying to be more respectable. And even then, people were thinking about licensing, and Gerry Ryan was there. But he was one of the very many pirate DJs, presenters, who were poached by RTE when Radio 2 was set up in 1979, and he stayed with RTE after that. Some people went back to the Pirates again, people like Declan Meehan, who wasn't happy with the lack of freedom in Radio 2, but Gerry Ryan stayed there. He was in very much a, you know, late night slots for many years, built up a following there, but late night radio was never going to have large numbers. And then in March 1988, RTE took a gamble and put him on the primetime slot from in mid-morning, which is the greatest amount of listeners in radio, basically, is at that time. And I think, you know, RTE made many mistakes with Radio 2, Brian. We've discussed this before with 2FM, as it's called now.
Certainly, it couldn't compete with the pirate stations for basically the first 10 years of its existence. But I think that Gerry Ryan changed that. And we need to think about the timing as well. It was potentially very far-sighted of RTE to put him in the mid-morning slot, because at that stage, March 1988, it was clear that the writing was on the wall for the pirates. The new legislation had been brought in. The pirates were to be closed by the end of 1988, and we would have the brave new world of licensed independent broadcasting. And RTE could see that the pirates were in decline, and they were very worried about the commercial competitors who were going to come on the scene, many of them perhaps emerging from the pirate world. And they wisely put Gerry Ryan into pole position. And he then took advantage. He had a head start, in fact, because when the pirates closed at the end of 1988, then essentially he was the go-to option for many listeners in Dublin and, of course, across the country. And he had the airwaves practically to himself for the first 6 months of 1989, before the government started to roll out the licensing process. So I think, you know, those months definitely allowed him to establish himself in the broadcasting landscape, perhaps to an even greater extent than would have been possible if there had been several commercial competitors at the time. Gerry Ryan,
weekdays from 9. Now, hello, everybody. I'm just sitting down at my desk. Cormac has just got the machine up and running. All the lights are glowing. And the right buttons have been pressed. Now, adjusting my microphone, putting on my headphones. Now I can hear everything, more particularly myself. Now, this morning, along with everything else, we also celebrate 40 years of this radio station. Started back in 1979. You may have heard the guys on The Breakfast Show talking a little bit about it this morning. Just keep the coffee away from the desk. As banjoed and all as it is, and it's pretty banjoed, at least it still does manage to transmit the voice of G. Ryan to the nation. So keep the coffee away from that. Now, it's good to be back and the weather's nice. And it's, well, I arrived into the office this morning. There were smiling faces. Country still seems to be functioning. And I am absolutely determined that we are going to have a good summer together. Anyway, for those of you who have just woken up maybe this morning and you're preparing to get down to the last minute study, the best of luck to you all next week. In these last moments, just relax and get through the past papers. I think that's the best thing to concentrate on today. 4 minutes past 9 o'clock, 1850 715 922. I'm back.
The voice of Gerry Ryan on a special programme made by Will Leahy to mark the 40th anniversary of 2FM in 2019. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Wireless on Flirt FM. Join us again next month for more radio news and features from home and abroad. I hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. You can also listen to previous shows on wirelessflirt.radio.ie, where you can also subscribe to our podcast. Until the next edition of Wireless, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.